Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Blog Talk Radio Network. We just switched networks. I'm used to saying that other network, as well as YouTube and iTunes and podcast.com and blueberry.com and Stitcher Radio. And of course, our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. Since I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, you see the connection. Easy to remember. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And not only that, but we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout, which, believe me, you do not want to catch. It's worse than the common cold. Now, we have a very exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg. Say hello, Adrian.
Gotta unmute myself.
Oh. Adrienne's founder of the Caregiver Space, an amazing platform. She's got somewhere in the neighborhood of 160,000 followers. Great job, Adrienne.
Thank you.
Steve Moran, we've got an exciting show planned for you today. Steve Moran, publisher of the Senior Housing Forum, and today it's all about senior housing. So I know you've got questions out there, and we're going to answer them before you even ask them. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. And if you're new to the show, and we get many new listeners every week, especially since we've gone video, I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is the caregivers of every single kind. Oh, my goodness. I hear a phone.
Yep.
Anyway, yes, mute your phones. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are, well, let's take stock here. They're caring and they're selfless and they're sacrificial. Oh, yeah. And they've got one tiny little bad habit. They're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Now, like the airlines, they give us good advice every time we board a plane. I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but they tell us things like, well, in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you try to help your loved one with their mask, right? You've heard that. And the reason they do that is because they know very well that if you don't do that, you're going to black out and then you won't be any good to anybody with anything because you got to put your needs above loved ones. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Anytime we suffer loss, we go through grief. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. You can't go around it or over it, under it. No shortcuts. Got to go through it. Sorry. But hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to, you know, feel like you're stuck like a car in the mud. Hey, let me take this time and thank my last week's guest, author and caregiver Douglas Cooper, with one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard. And just to remind you, you can listen to that video and today's video and all our videos on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S and caregiver without an S. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. Just for doing that, I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free. What a deal. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships. All right, enough of that. Steve, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I really appreciate it. Why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself just to Steve Moran?
So I'm really excited to be here talking to you, although I am going to confess to you that I almost wish that I were doing the interview of you, because
really?
I think that I have an audience that needs to hear what you have to say that oftentimes doesn't listen. So let me tell you a little bit about what I do. I run a publication called Senior Housing Forum. You do a Google search for Senior Housing Forum, it'll be the first thing that comes up, I guarantee it. But it's seniorhousingforum.net, just to give you that, just in case. We are a platform where we publish articles every day, 5 days a week, that are specifically geared towards and written for people who own and operate senior living communities. So these are CEOs, chief operating officers, regional directors. They are the folks who are who are hiring caregivers and who are responsible for providing for care for maybe a million people across the country, or if you include skilled nursing, about 2.5 million people. And so they hire lots and lots of caregivers. And so I spend a lot of time. We are not a news site, so we don't just talk about what's happening, although it's occasionally we touch on that. We really publish articles that say, this is a better way to do this, or, yeah, we've been doing it this way, but maybe we ought to change how we're doing things.
I see. And the website, again, is Senior Living Housing?
Senior Housing Forum, .net.
Forum, forum.net.
Yes.
I'm having trouble seeing today. Just want to pull it up. And you are the first one on Google, so that makes you a big shot.
Well, maybe.
Wow, so that's a very important job, and you actually, that's your full-time job, and you actually make money doing this, I assume.
I do make money doing it. I make a nice income. We have a series of just fantastic sponsors who we help them tell their stories. These are folks who are selling products and services to the senior living space. And we publish stories about them. And since you asked, the way we work is we try to tell stories about how they're helping providers do a better job. So they're not just simply commercials, but if you were a provider and you're reading about one of the sponsors, you'd be able to get something out of it. And if you had a need for their services, you might call them up and talk to them.
Well, you sound like a very important person. Like one of your articles I see here, better think before building that memory care unit. So where'd you get all this knowledge about, you know, the industry and facilities and construction, I believe, right?
Yep. So about the time I was graduating from college, I'm almost afraid to confess the story to you, but I started out as an insurance sales guy, and I was horrible.
We all have to do that, right?
That's right. And I sort of stumbled across this idea of doing board and cares, and I had a friend of mine who was doing that and having some success at it. So I bought one. It was a terrible, terrible building. I'm embarrassed by it now. It was, we didn't do a very good job. If I tell you the truth, we built a few buildings, and I was mostly about saving costs, and I didn't really understand caregiving very well. And it ultimately all blew up on me, but I went from there and went to work for another company that was doing bigger buildings. And I got a lot smarter along the way. And I did that for, worked in the industry for about 15 years, and then got a chance to go get rich in Silicon Valley during the dot-com boom. And so I went to work for this startup company, and my plan was that I was going to work for 4 or 5 years. I was going to get a bunch of stock options. I was going to get rich, and I would retire at 45 with millions of dollars in the bank.
So it's like you're an entrepreneur, an investor, a businessman, and you decided what's the best thing I can make my money in. And caregiving, obviously, the baby boomers are getting older and older and older. There's a shortage of senior housing or senior facilities, I should say. And it seemed like a good thing to get into. What year did you start?
Oh, this was back in the late 70s and early 80s. So this was a long time ago. And then, like I said, I was out of the caregiving for 10 or 15 years. And about 6.5 years ago, I decided I didn't like high tech very much. I was okay at it. I wasn't great, but I didn't have a heart for it. And I wanted to come back to the senior living space. And so I went looking for a job in that space. And I went to work for a company called Vigil Health Solutions that does emergency call systems or nurse call systems in senior living communities. And concurrently with that, I started Senior Housing Forum, which, of course, at that point in time, had no readers and no no revenue. And so, Adrian, you know, you talked about, or Dave talked about your numbers on your Facebook page, and that makes me blush because they're so much better than my numbers are. But you start out with nobody.
They're better than anybody's numbers.
So,
wow. Well, that's amazing. You know, I usually say that there's three kinds of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who are going to need a caregiver, and those. Oh my gosh! Say it for me, Adriana, because I have a little brain fart here.
who will become
caregivers?
Yes. So life didn't think it was fair that you run a caregiving forum publication without you becoming a caregiver.
Exactly.
So you have recently become an actual caregiver. That's probably helped you be a better caregiver, having all this knowledge of seeing other people do it, I assume.
Yeah, so I'll tell you a very interesting story about that. a couple of years ago, I realized that there are lots of books on long-term care and what the finances look like, what the money part looks like and how you pay for it and what the senior living options are and what nursing options are. But the one thing that's really been lacking out there is a book that really talks about how you make these hard moral choices about death and dying as people approach, particularly nursing home, having to go into a nursing home. And so I worked with one of my team members to write a book, and it's about 80% done. And I needed to really sit down and concentrate on making these really talking about these hard decisions: feeding tubes versus no feeding tubes. Do you prolong life as long as you can, or do you say quality of life is more important? And I can't tell you how many times I've sat down to write that portion of the book, and it's the only thing that's missing. And so it's probably the last 20%, but it's the most important.
Yeah.
And I've never been able to do it because I was always writing from a theoretical perspective. So 5 months ago, I was speaking at a conference up in Aspen, Colorado, which was a really cool place to be. I was talking to a bunch of interior designers in the senior living space.
Wow.
And I was sitting at my desk early in the morning, and my cell phone rang, and it was 6 o'clock Aspen time, which means it was 5 o'clock California time. And I looked at my caller ID, and I could see that it was my brother. And I've got a good relationship with my brother. We're not super close, and it could only be bad news. So I answered the phone with some trepidation, and he told me that mom had had a stroke. And she was already fairly frail, but she'd had a stroke and was in the hospital. It was one of those terrible real-life moments because I actually had to speak that day, and so we talked about it. I went in and I did my presentation to this group of leaders. And then I took this long, complicated journey to get back down to San Jose, where my mom was in the hospital. In some sense, I was very fortunate because it didn't kill her and it didn't permanently disable her. She was in the hospital a week and came home. But she just sort of lost her a will to live. So she'd lay in bed all day. She had caregivers coming in. Her husband was there to caregive for her. I stayed for a week or so, tried to provide as much support as I could. And she stayed that way for five and a half months. My brother, being the bearer of bad news, 6 weeks ago, he called me up again in the middle of the night saying, Mom's husband, Gary, has had driven himself to the hospital, and it looks like he's had a heart attack. So down to the Bay Area.
He drove himself.
Yes. He hadn't had chest pains for 2 days. I'm really scary stuff. He's, you know, the very stoic person. And so I went down, and sort of making it worse, his mother-in-law was also in her last days. And so I went down and stayed with my mom for a week. My mom's husband, Gary, had bypass surgery. It was successful. He was recovering nicely, but I couldn't stay in the Bay Area caregiving for my mom. And so after a week, I loaded her in the car and brought her to my house. And so for the last 4 or 5 weeks, I've been caring with her. We have some help coming in, but my wife's a recovering nurse, and so she could do a lot of the stuff, and I had to do a lot of the stuff. And so we've been doing caregiving at my house with my mom for the last 5 weeks. And then New Year's Eve, she started having falls, and New Year's Day, she went into the hospital. And so we're sort of facing her last days right now. In fact, probably we'll move her today from the hospital either to a nursing home or back to our house on hospice. We're not quite sure where that's going to go yet.
So how is this experience affecting your chapter on end-of-life decisions, you know, the feeding tubes, et cetera?
So we've been going through these decisions, and it's going to be much easier to write this chapter or a series of chapters because I've lived it now. And we've had to walk through very, very difficult decisions. Fortunately, my mom has some cognitive deficits, she actually has the ability to understand what's going on. And so she's been able to give a lot of input. But at the end of the day, I'm the legal decider, which is a sobering, humbling, awesome responsibility and privilege. And of course, the goal is to make sure we do what she wants to do, not what I want to do or I think is best. And to this point, she's been able to express her wishes. And so that's really, really a blessing.
Now, has she filled out a living will?
She has not. So we did a pulse at the hospital. So we have a legal document now.
You do.
And I'm named as the responsible medical party for that. And the other part of the story I didn't tell you is that when she went in the hospital, her husband came up here to see her from the Bay Area. I'm in Sacramento, just to give you some geography. Uh-huh. He was here one night, and he woke up with a horrible fever, and so they're both in the hospital at the same hospital, and so I'm sort of doing double-duty caregiving. He'll come back to our house in a couple of days. So we may have two people we're caring for here in the next few days.
Yeah, caregiving is like that. It doesn't warn you.
No, it snowballs.
It's like being drafted into the Army. You know, it wasn't on your resume. Can't
That's
get
right.
out of it. But in a living will, I'm sure you know this, you know, even the official document that the hospital gives you, usually the patient expresses their wishes and then appoint someone like yourself to answer any questions that were not spelled out in the will.
Right.
So is a lot like 90% of the stuff is already spelled out according to her wishes. Did she do that part of it, or did she give you the majority of decisions to make?
She did not do that. And in fact, under normal circumstances, her husband would be the one who makes those decisions.
Right.
Except
but this is the second husband, right?
This is the second husband, but they've been together for 35 years. I have a great relationship with him. And
why you? And not him.
Or is this your brother?
So,
well, we know why not his brother, because he only calls when there's bad news.
There you go. Yeah. So there are probably a couple of three reasons. The first is I'm the oldest, and it typically falls to the oldest, not always. I work in the industry, so I've got some knowledge, and I will certainly tell you that theoretical
that's
knowledge
true.
And living knowledge are not the same thing.
Right.
So that's been a really fascinating journey. And
yeah, but you're the so-called expert, you know.
I'm the so-called expert. That's right. And I
That's enough.
Probably have a closer relationship with him in particular. And the other thing is, we're all in the same town, and my brother is a few hours away. So
Okay.
lots of reasons.
That's probably her husband's first choice, you being because you're the
Right.
expert, so-called.
Right.
The there's some perceptions about having a living will. Like I filled mine out and it was very easy. I mean, it's supposed to be all these difficult decisions. I said, okay, no tubes, no ventilators, no this, no that. I know where I'm going when I die. And is it really that easy, or am I just a naive person with a simplistic view of life or death?
You're a naive person with a simplistic view of life. And I'm gonna
Okay.
let me present you the dilemma that I had that I'm living through right now.
Yeah, because I might rethink my will here.
Well, you might. I don't know. So my mom has some cognitive deficits, but if you were to walk into her hospital room, maybe even today, but certainly a week ago, if you were to walk in, you'd see a frail older woman. And you'd have a conversation with her, and you'd have a good conversation. And so she would be able to respond to your questions. She'd respond appropriately. She probably wouldn't initiate conversations, but if you ask her questions, if you ask her about her kids and her life, she'd be able to tell you about those things. She can't eat. She's NPO. And so the question is, you've talked about no tubes, right? No, and so the doctor, the first hospitalist has said, well, she's going to die if she doesn't put in a G tube so she can get nourishment. And if you give her nourishment, then she might be able to continue, very well continue to be able to live at the state that she's at right now. Or maybe she'll even get a little bit better, maybe better than the way she was a week before Christmas rather than her weakened state today. So if you don't put in a tube, she's not going to get any nourishment and she'll pass away in a week or 10 days. So you're really taking somebody who has some real cognitive ability, who's a real human being. You're not talking about somebody who's a vegetable. So my question, I'm going to throw it back at you. So my question is that you're in this situation, you're in bed, you're frail, and somebody comes to you and says, you know you've got some real quality of life. It's not great. And the only way to maintain that with a slight chance of getting better is to put in a feeding tube. So you've already said no feeding tube. Is that really what you want?
Yeah, I see what you mean. How about you, Adrian?
I've been there.
With yourself or with someone else?
With someone else, someone who at the last minute, she had a very dear friend had a living will, and she wanted no heroic measures whatsoever
Not even the
until
paddles and,
nothing
Okay.
until she was faced with her imminent death. And she ended up opting for every heroic measure that could possibly be taken, as
Really?
long as she could communicate. She was on feeding tubes. She was on a ventilator. She was everything, but she was a writer. And as long as she could write and communicate, she wanted to be alive.
Okay,
So
I'm rethinking mine.
it's no, I mean it really. Her sister was beside herself because her wishes had been so clear, and she had been, aware of the fact that the end was near. Well, the end was not quite so near once my friend made this decision to take all of the heroic measures.
Interesting.
And it was not pretty, but she was still cognizant, and because she made the decision herself, her sister couldn't override it. She went along with her sister's wishes, which were at that point, written down by the hand of the person who wanted them. So.
Yeah, interesting discussion. We're going to take a short break and then we're going to come back and talk about long-term care. And I'd love to know, what percentage of of people actually have a policy. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere, but if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Steve Moran and Adrian Gruberg, and I'm Dave Nassani, and we're talking all about senior living. And I had to laugh. I'm looking at your website, Steve, and top stories here. Nude modeling in assisted living. Assisted living residents fight for their right to party. 52,000 views in 20 days. Drama in dementia care. I mean, you're a good writer, I guess, huh?
Well, I tell you, one of the things that I've learned is that is that the headline is everything.
That's true.
I laugh about the I laugh about the nude modeling. I was at a senior living community down in the Bay Area, and I'm getting a tour, and the executive director says, you know, one of the things we do that's really cool is we have art classes here, and that includes having nude models come in, and it's. You know, we know sex sells, right? And so
it was like,
okay, this is an article. And if you actually go read the article, the nude modeling is really a relatively small part of the article. But it's like, I know this will get read a lot. And that was actually published probably 2 years ago, but it keeps popping up as one of the most read articles because, you know, how could you resist it?
He's a marketing guy. There you go.
Yeah, I am.
All right, let's talk about long-term care. You know, a lot of people don't have it. I used to sell insurance, so I bought it when I was like 48, I think. And it cost me $110 a month, And they told me it'll never go up individually, but you know, they might, there's just slight possibility they might raise, you know, as a whole group of people. And so I'm 63 now, so 48 minus 63, 58. So what, 15 years never went up. I get a letter like 3 days ago. Guess what it says? We're raising your long-term rate. And at first I
Two.
freaked. I freaked because they said $746. And I says, oh my God, that's like, you know, 400%. And then I was getting mad because I said, oh, you know, I don't want to cancel it, but that's too much to pay. But and then it said semi-annual premium. I said, oh, let me do
Oh,
math.
not so bad.
16%,
which is about what my medical Obamacare thing went up. So, you know, I started out before Obamacare, $350 a month for just me, medical insurance, and it went up after Obamacare went in to like 650, and then it went up to 750, and now this latest one, 950. So from 350 to 950, thank you, Mr. Obama. But don't get me started on that. Let's talk about long-term care. How many patients entering a facility would you say actually have a policy, and how many don't?
So the number is tiny.
Really?
Most of us, yeah, most of us don't. So I'm not like you. I don't have a long-term care policy. I wish I did.
You of all people.
How old are you?
I am about a year younger than you. I'll turn 62 in
So,
about 3 weeks.
are you in good health?
I am in good health,
So,
more or less.
have you ever priced one to see what that would actually cost?
Yeah, probably about $400 or $500 a month for me at my
Mm.
age. So it's a
Yeah.
lot of money.
A little more than you want to spend.
And so I've got to just make enough money blogging so I can afford it, you know. But
Well, you know, it costs average $3,000 to $3,500 a month here in California to enter a nice place, you know, assisted living.
assisted living, not skilled
Yeah.
nursing, because you're looking at about $6,000 to $7,000 a month for
Wow.
skilled nursing
Wow.
in California. Yeah, so it's expensive. It is. It
Well, it
really
might be
is.
worth $400 a month. You know, I never
It
know.
might. It
Yeah,
might.
move to Manhattan.
How much, Adrian?
No. I'm more likely to move to
Over
Louisiana
eight
or
thousand
somewhere.
for skilled. Yeah.
Wow.
Just independent living is about 8,000 with increments,
So assisted
additional
living is
care.
more.
Oh yeah.
See, my
That's
policy
about
is
what it.
400 a day, which is like 12,000 a month. I should be able to get a nice place,
Very nice.
even in Manhattan,
Even
Right.
in Manhattan,
That's
yes.
right.
Top floor overlooking, you know, Trump Tower or whatever.
Overlooking Trump Tower? Does
That's
anything
Central.
overlook Trump Tower?
I meant to say Central Park.
Yes.
Maybe I can get on the top of Trump Tower.
Well.
There's an old joke going around the internet that this old lady is keeps going on the same cruise over and over and over again. They said, "How could you afford this cruise?" She goes, "Well, they said I need to go in assisted living." And I says, "No, I don't want to do that. And this cruise ship is cheaper than assisted living,
Cheaper.
and it's I get the entertainment, I get the food, blah blah blah, blah." And I started doing the math, and I said, "She's right."
She is right.
Well, you know, there are about 100 people worldwide, mostly seniors, that maybe all seniors who live full time on cruise ships. There was a big news story that
Really?
went around about 2 or 3 years ago about this woman who lives on it. But as
So
part, I
it's
was
not a
really,
joke.
it's not a joke.
No.
It's not a joke. Now, the
No.
problem is
All right.
you don't get the care services, so you've got to still be fairly independent.
Yeah. So
And
it's
of
more like
course,
independent living.
it is. And
Yeah.
if you go tour senior living communities, independent living and assisted living, you'll find very frequently the marketing people will say, you know, we're just like a cruise ship or like a luxury hotel. Now, I will confess to you, and if you read through my website, you'll see that I've written about this. Every time I hear that description, it makes me want to barf.
Yeah.
Because the truth of the matter is if I came to you and I said, I'm going to give you a free cruise for a couple of weeks on a luxury cruise line, how would you feel about that?
Yeah.
You'd be up for that, right?
Sign me up.
But if I told you that you could go, that there was just one little catch, that it wasn't really 2 weeks, that you were never going to be able to get off that cruise ship again, how would you feel about it?
Well, it would depend on what the other option would be.
Well, the other option would be to live
jail.
Your life. Well, take yeah, it. Sure. But if the other option would be to live your life, the problem is that the cruise ship as a luxury is a great time, right? But it strips purpose out of people's lives. It's just about taking. And we just know that human beings don't really thrive when they're actually purposeless and when they're not giving back. I mean, there's great data.
Now, Steve, you're somebody that blogs for a living. You can blog anywhere in the world.
Yep.
You could blog on a cruise ship for the rest of your life.
I have blogged on a cruise ship, but
no,
I wouldn't
I'm
do
just
it for
saying,
the rest of my life.
No, but I'm just saying you could with the internet. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're much more involved in the rest of the world than you would have been years ago.
Yep.
It's a different argument.
There might be a case where that would be the place. And I certainly know of a number of people who were sort of internet millionaires who one of their big appeals is they can do it from any place in the world.
Yes.
But at least for me, you know, from purpose in my life means being able to get out and interact with people. And so as a, for instance, a couple of years ago, I did a series of articles where once a week I would go inside a senior living community and then write about it. It was actually a fairly discouraging adventure because most of the time the experiences were not very good. And so I actually have I restarted that series. I published my first one last week where I talked about a phone interaction I didn't have where I tried to call looking for some information for assisted living for my mother. And I got a voicemail from the marketing department that said, sorry, I'm not here right now. I'm out doing something and maybe I'll get back to your call and I called at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And it was like, maybe I'll get back to your call today, but if not, I'll call you back tomorrow morning. Hmm. And it's like, I'm in a crisis now. I need help now.
Right.
And so it was not a very good, didn't put a very good face on the industry, honestly.
Wow. God, we can probably talk 3 hours on this subject, but I've got to be organized here. I've got a list of questions I want to get to.
Yeah.
Employers who employ caregivers, are they good bosses or do they kind of have little regard for caregivers? What's your experience with that?
So this is a great question. I think that there is lip service paid to appreciating caregivers. I'm not sure that they do as good a job as I wish they did. I believe very strongly that you cannot give good resident care unless you take care of your team.
I agree.
And so in my view, if I owned and operated a senior living community or a senior living organization, my number one job would be to make sure that my caregivers, my frontline staff, love coming to work every day. And I'm afraid that most employers don't do a great job of that. Until very recently, if you went to the website Glassdoor, which is sort of the consumer ratings for employers, you would find no senior living communities anywhere near the top. And even today, you'll find most of them are way down the line rather than way up on top. I will say to their credit that Aegis Senior Living just recently is... They just announced their 2017 numbers, and Aegis Senior Living out of Washington State ended up at number 46 on the best companies to work in the United States. And yet, even they have a really massive, you know, relatively large turnover of employees.
So, what if you were an employer? What are the top three improvements or changes you would make? Or things you would establish in your organization?
So the first thing that I would do is every day I'd be telling stories about how We as an organization and caregivers in particular are making a huge difference in people's lives. We forget when we're working in the trench, when I'm up for the fourth time, helping my mom go to the bathroom and it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm just helping my mom go to the bathroom and I'm tired and I'm grumpy and I hate it. And sometimes it becomes real easy to miss that I'm taking care of this woman who raised children, who put people out there who are now changing the world. And so the first thing that I do is I'd spend time celebrating how we're actually making the world a better place each and every day in our senior living community.
Build up their self-esteem and yeah.
Yeah, the second thing I would do is I would say, here are the things that we need to get done each day as you know, for your part of the world of caregiving. These are the things we need to accomplish. And I might even say, this is how we've been doing it. But what I want you to do as you go in your job, go figure out how you can do it in a way that works best for you. That I don't care how you specifically accomplish it, what order, say, you care for your residents, or you know how you do it, as long as the resident is well cared for, that the things that need to be get done are done. Go out and do it your way, because we all have different ways of working and thinking about it. And in fact, it's likely that the caregiver is going to have a better way to do it that might teach us all. And then the third thing is I'd really spend a lot of time, you know, just listening to what they have and talking about that and hearing their stories, their frustrations. And so those would be my three things.
I have a question here. Would you see to it that these people were better compensated for the work that they do? It is difficult work and they're grossly underpaid. How do you change that?
And let me tag on the end of that. Most agencies are charging $30 an hour, at least at a minimum, right?
Not in
California. How much of that $30 goes to the owner, and how much goes to the caregiver?
Yeah. So I'm paying for a caregiver right now. I've been paying for a caregiver for my mom here in Sacramento. So that's sort of numbers I can work with because I know what those are. And we're paying the agency, I think, $27.50 an hour. And I haven't actually asked the caregivers, and I'm not sure whether they'd be allowed to tell, but my guess is that they're making in the neighborhood of $11 or $12 or $13 an hour. So the agency
just
is probably keeping
slightly
more than
over half. Minimum wage.
Over minimum wage.
And is this person a skilled nurse or companion, or I mean, what basis?
Companion basis. I can't tell you for sure. I don't know that any of them have CNA. I don't think so, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But they've got some skills. I mean, and we've had three or four different people, and I will tell you that I've loved every one of them. They've all been terrific people.
But they're not administering medication and such.
No. They're basically companionship, help with bathing and dressing, those kinds of things.
And don't forget, Adrian, we're not minimizing, someone who doesn't have those kind of skills, because
no, not
just,
at all.
Just being a companion, and a caregiver is a huge job.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. No, I
I'm
knew you
not
are.
Minimizing I'm just, it. I'm not minimizing it at all. I'm just saying that the skill levels are different than a registered nurse, for example.
Yeah, and I knew you weren't. I just for the audience.
Yeah,
in case they.
So
it's a thankless job, in other words, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, and see, so Dave, I think that this is where it becomes really critical. Is that it doesn't have to be, and it shouldn't be a thankless job, which is why we don't need to be. And that's probably the biggest thing. The reality is that you look at the economics for a caregiving agency and you say, well, man, they're only getting not even half of what the agency is charging. Well, the agency, of course, has another 20 or 30% on top of that they've got to pay or more. And if they're providing even a partial subsidy of health insurance, let's say somebody is getting $10 an hour, the health insurance subsidy, not the whole thing, but just part of it, might be another $5 an hour that the agency is picking up. And so,
yeah.
And then there are overhead and there's marketing and all those kinds of things. And so even if you're running an, if you have somebody who's running an agency, I'm not telling you they're not making a good living, but it's not an easy path to just, yeah. you know, mansions oh. on the hill and Learjets and those kinds of things. It's just,
yeah.
it's tough. And I don't, and there's actually, you know, the question you might ask is how much money would you have to pay to make it a lot better? And I don't know, I don't, if you double it, I'm not sure it would still be, wouldn't still feel thankless most of the time.
Yeah. Here in California, you know, we can hire a caregiver who's decent, who's not a part of an agency for about $15 an hour. Anything below that, you're not getting a real good person. The other thing about burnout, you know, there's this perception that paid caregivers burn out less than volunteer caregivers because, you know, it's all about the money. But I don't think that's true. Do you?
No, I don't. I think the one advantage the paid caregivers have is that I'm not saying it's not emotional, but I think when I'm caring for somebody who's not my mom or my dad or somebody that I'm directly related to, it's easier to, you know, the emotional burden is not quite so high. And as, you know, I talked about earlier about my working, you know, the stuff I'm doing with my mom, and I'm fortunate that my wife has, you know, got caregiving skills. And so some of the, you know, bathing, showering, I haven't had to do, but the emotional energy that it's taken on me to do that caregiving because it's my mom is huge. And if I were caregiving for somebody else who I was not related to, who I had, say, a contractual relationship, I'm not saying there'd be no emotional burden because there would, but it would be much substantially less.
Yeah. But in fairness, some paid caregivers are it just depends on the person, because some we get a lot of comments from paid caregivers that, you know, they really get attached to
oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Some do, and some, very, you know, can keep, you know, their separation, go home and then just turn it off. Some people, when they go home, they can't turn it off.
And which would you rather have? Someone who was emotionally vested in you and really cared about you, or someone who was detached?
Yes, the person who is prone to burnout, yes.
Yeah. And that was exactly my point. As I have two loved ones in the hospitals, I've interacted with a whole bunch of nurses. And I've had one that was a mildly unpleasant experience and one that was absolutely amazing. Yeah. She and the rest of them have been just, you know, they've not been good or bad. They've been just, you know, doing the job. And I have to tell you that the one who's been doing just an amazing job, she was off for the weekend, and so I assume she'll be back taking care of my mom today, and I'm just so excited about it because she really cares. I mean, she's emotionally invested. In mm-hmm. fact, I'll probably write an article about her because, you know, I actually sat down on Friday. I said, so I'm watching you care, and you obviously got the same level of patience as everybody else, and yet you have the time to really seem to take the time to really be invested in what's going on with my mom and our family. And nobody else does. Not that anybody is terrible. It's just that there's this world of difference. And she said, I just try to approach it like I was caring for somebody I love. And so yeah. that's what I want. And yet I recognize that there's a burden that goes with that, an emotional cost that goes with that.
Yeah. How about a paid caregiver who has a terrible patient, whatever that means, a terrible patient.
My mother.
Nobody wants to be with her. And so somehow, maybe you're at the bottom of the totem pole, you got this person that nobody else wants. What advice would you give that person? Would you say, you know, for their own sake that they should request somebody else? Or, you know, it seems like a no-win situation. What's your advice on that?
So I think it is a no-win situation, and I think that it's natural that somebody who's a really difficult patient is probably not going to get as good a care as somebody who is really kind and compassionate to the caregiver, and that's just a natural thing, and I don't blame the caregiver for that. I'd be the same way. I, you know, again, going back to my hospital experience, I'm working really hard to be nice to all the people who are caring for my parents, partly because that's my my personality and my nature, but partly because I know they'll get better care that way. And so if you treat somebody terrible, you're not going to get as good a care. And probably my advice would be that if I were a caregiver, I'd be saying, okay, I know this person needs to be taken care of, but I'm only going to do it 2 days a week. I'm not going to do it full time. It's not fair to me. And so you spread the burden around.
Yeah. And it's like insulting a cook, you know. Don't do that. They're going to spit in your food, you know.
What are
you
crazy? Exactly.
So what's your best what's your best caregiver story? I know you've got one.
I do. I'm so glad you asked this. So this is not a personal story. This was told to me by, I'm going to apologize in advance. The person told me, I haven't written it yet, but I'm going to. And I know I actually have a video of it. But so there was a guy who was in a memory care part of a community. And we'll call him Bob. I don't remember what his name is, but we'll call him Bob. And, Bob was pretty confused. And Bob decided that he wasn't going to take a shower. And it got really bad. I mean, it got, a week and past a week, and he was not smelling good. And it really was physically unhealthy for him. And everybody was trying to get in there, and the executive director was in there and trying to get Bob to take a shower. Bob wouldn't do it, and nobody would do it. He wouldn't take a shower. He just refused. And, they were looking at maybe having to discharge him to a higher level of care or, do something really drastic. It was a horrible, horrible, horrible thing. And Maria, who was a housekeeper, so she wasn't actually, from a sort of a job description, a caregiver. Everybody in the whole building knew about it, and she had read something or had been in in-service or heard somebody tell a story, and so she had this idea. And so she goes from the part of the building that she was in to where Bob was, and she goes up to Bob and she says, "Hey Bob, would you like to dance?"
What?
Dance? Would you like to dance? And
Adrian,
and Bob says, noise. And Bob says, "Well, yeah, I would like to dance." And so Maria says, "Well, Bob, if we're going to dance, then, we need to really get dressed up and take a shower. And so can I help go in and can I help you shower so we can go dance together?"
Oh, wow.
Said, that's a good idea.
I would do it.
That's right. You would. And so he takes her into the shower. She takes him into the shower and she gets him showered.
He gets undressed too, right?
Huh?
She gets undressed too, right?
Well, I don't know about that. But he gets dressed back up and they go out and they put on some music and they dance together.
Oh.
And it's a powerful, powerful expression of what, stopping and thinking about something, how
creative
it can really
thinking,
make a difference.
Absolutely.
And it was compassionate. And part of the thing I like the best about it is that this was a senior living community where a housekeeper from another department went to solve a problem, and that was celebrated rather than being punished. Because I will tell you, there are places where somebody would have said, "You can't come over here and do that. This isn't your job. It's not your responsibility. You're a housekeeper."
Sure.
And instead, the goal was to create a great day for everybody. And so not only did it make a great solve a problem with Bob and a great day for Bob, it made a great day for not the caregiver who danced, of course, but really everybody because they could celebrate life together.
She should have won Employee of the Week and given a bonus. That's what she should have done.
That's right.
And taken out to dinner.
Yep.
So I want you to take your crystal ball out because, the population is changing. Baby boomers are getting older. The workforce is getting less. And, it's just top heavy. What do you see the whole senior living industry evolving into over the next few years?
So this is a really, really good question. I think that we're going to see the board and care level style senior living continue to grow. As you probably know, Dave, here in California, it is a significant force. We have about 8,000 senior living buildings that are, six bed kinds of home based kinds of things. And some of them are really, really cool. If you're ever looking for a story, there's a guy here in Sacramento who has just an amazing six-bed place that I think I probably, if I needed care, would be the place I'd want to be rather than the big enterprise places.
Really?
I think we're going to see more. I think we're going to see more and more sort of independent senior living communities where they bring in just the amount of caregiver services and other services that they need.
Mm-hmm.
Largely because of economics. And I think that one of the big unknowns is that we just don't know how we baby boomers are really going to react to senior living as it is today, what it's going to take. Yeah, exactly. That's the point, right? I was at a conference where Chip Connelly, who is very prominent, he's the chief marketing officer for Airbnb, spoke. And he was talking about his parents being in a senior living community. And so I asked the question. They had a question to answer. I said, so would you move into your parents' community? I put my hand up, and there was this long, long pause. And he finally said no. And I think that likely is going to be a big challenge, as people are really going to be willing to accept the product that we're making today. So I just don't know the answer to that.
So you mentioned something that I thought was interesting. I don't know if this is where you were going. You said a 6-bed facility. So that would be like a boutique.
It's like someone's home. They converted it.
Someone's home that's manageable and more personal.
Yeah. So what
I could deal with that possibly, but I know that most people want to age at home. They do not want to go to facilities, needless to say. But
so,
how would you improve them?
Absolutely. Yeah. The data is overwhelming that that's true. I think the question really comes is that really best? Because the challenge of being at home, aging at home, is that you've got isolation and depression. There's actually some good data that suggests that says that people who age in place have shorter lifespans and have higher rates of depression. And so I know that that's people's well-being. And again, this has become, almost, it would be a whole nother show, right? But I think one of the big questions is we have this idea that we should, that elders need to have, complete choice in how they live their lives and what they do. But what do you do when the choices they make are either impossible, like when my stepfather had his heart attack, and my mom said, I'm not leaving my house. I want to stay here. Well, mom, there's nobody here to take care of you. That's not an option. Well, I want to leave my house. So what do you do about those issues? So what do you do about that?
Well, I mean, wouldn't you bring someone in to just take care of her until the situation normalizes itself?
Well, if you have enough money to do that, but that's what might be $20,000 a month.
Or does that come into a long-term care package?
Well, I don't know. Dave, you're the long-term care expert.
We are?
Aren't you? No, you are. You've got the policy, right?
I do, too. Oh.
Yeah. And you do, too. So I don't know the answer to that. So.
Well, I made sure that I got a policy that would allow me to hire a companion and have long-term care pay for it, so
room
that I wouldn't
board,
need
maybe
somebody skilled, but I would. I was looking at something that was going to fit my personality.
Right. Like having a roommate, so you have to make sure you get along with that. You might have
absolutely
to go through 3 or 4 until you find one. My wife's mother just did this. She had a caregiver living in the home for 1 year and 3 months, and she's starting to get dementia now, and the caregiver just quit on her. Like 5 days ago.
Oh, no.
She couldn't put up with Charlene's mother just accusing her all the time of stealing stuff. And she called the police on her like 3 different times. She finally says, I'm out of here. And I got a call last night at 11 p.m. just saying, my silver dollars are missing. My personal papers, my birth certificate. I says, why would she want your birth certificate and your marriage license? Just to be spiteful and big,
On the other hand, you would imagine that somebody who's been caring for her all this time would know what was entailed in the aging process, that she was going to go downhill.
Yeah.
That
well,
she would start to get paranoid.
Sometimes it's hard to visualize just how bad can be.
Mm.
Listen, we're running out of time. One last thing.
I just wanted to say one other thing. You do have situations where the patient is so difficult that they go through caregivers five a week.
Yeah.
The agency runs out of people to send.
So we don't know what we're going to do. She's we have someone coming in 4 hours a day, and the other 20 hours she's alone, which, you know, kind of makes us nervous, you know, sleeping alone. Oh, I have my dog. She's okay. And I says, no, that's not enough. You know, and she lives, 2.5 hours away. So, and her son lives in Minnesota. So, you know, I'm the closest thing there. So, you know, talk about a club sandwich. They say the sandwich generation. Listen, time for one last question. And I want to ask about senior environments. I had a guest the other day, and he actually builds communities that are like walled villages, and dementia patients are allowed to roam free. Mm. You know, they got their own drugstore, their own this, their own that, and they're safe. Do you have any opinion on those? Are they working out?
Yeah, so I think they're wonderful. I think they're beautiful places. I actually did an interview. I've got a video that I haven't actually edited and written it yet. One of the founders of the Danish Dementia Village, which has really pioneered that and been that. I'm not really aware of anybody in the U.S. who's done that. So if you've got somebody who's sort of made that model here, I'd actually be interested in hearing about that, because that might be.
He's just an architect. He wants to build one. I don't know if one has been built, but the Danish one, is it working out?
Oh, it works. It works great, and they actually are able to do it. You know, their income. So first off, the model of how they do elder care there is very, very different than how we do it here. It's all basically government subsidized, but they have to do it at the same, for the same dollar rate per patient day or per resident day as any other skilled nursing. Yeah. And they manage to make it work. Many times for these kinds of things, the challenge is getting the building built and the cost of getting it built. Oftentimes, once you get the building built, the cost of care is about the same as a more traditional place. But typically, the cost of building up a community like that is much higher. Okay. But it's a great way to go.
Steve, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. We can do a whole nother show with the stuff that we haven't even discussed yet. Thank you so much for coming on. How can someone get a hold of you if they want more information or they've got questions that need answered?
Yep. So look, if you do Google search for Steve Moran, I think you'll all come up high. If you do a search for Senior Housing Forum, we'll be the first thing that you come up. There are contact forms all over the place. And the one thing I would say is, if you've got a heart touching story about caregiving, I would love to hear that and tell that.
Oh, great.
Because I think that's how we get better.
That's Steve Moran, Moran. And Adrian, how can someone get a hold of you to gain wisdom?
Adrian, Adrienne, at thecaregiverspace.org.
Awesome. Thank you again for coming on the show. Just a reminder, caregivers, caregiver.com, go on there and take the quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? And we're on the air every Wednesday at at noon. Who's got dementia here? We will see you next week. Thank you so much, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.